Gentlemen, I'll go ahead and call to order this hearing. I just wrote it down. Of July 11th, 2018, for LU17-162196 CUMSAD. My name is Joe Turner. I'm the city's hearings officer. I'll start with some brief announcements and a summary of the process that will follow. I start by saying I am not a city employee. I'm licensed as an attorney and trained as a planner. I serve under contract to the city council. I say that so you know you're getting a somewhat independent review of the application before me today. My role as a hearings officer is to conduct public hearings and make decisions about certain land use matters in the city of Portland. In making those decisions, I am required to apply the city's existing laws. I'm not a policymaker. I don't have the authority to vary from or change the laws. If you think that the laws need to be changed, you can work with Planning Commission and City Council to do that. But state law requires that this application be judged based on the laws in effect when the application was filed. Procedure will follow. I'll start by asking staff to summarize their staff report, copies of which are available on the table over there. Then the applicant will have an opportunity to present their proposal and respond to the staff report. If anyone else wants to testify in support of the application, they may do so. Then anyone who wants to testify in opposition or with questions or concerns. Are we not coming out?
No, it's not very loud.
Can we turn up the volume? Or do I just need to move the mic closer? Is that helping?
Closer.
Testing, testing.
It doesn't sound like it's on.
Yeah. I'm not hearing anything. But we'll pause a minute. Thank you for letting me know. Okay, is that better? Anything? Yes? Okay.
There you go.
There. Something changed. Did everybody hear my intro so far? Where was it? Yes. If anyone else wants to testify in support of the application, they may do so. Then anyone who wants to testify in opposition or with questions or concerns, that sounds much better. I can hear myself. Once everyone has had an initial opportunity to testify, I'll give staff and the applicant an opportunity to respond to the testimony that was offered. If that response includes any new evidence, I will give everyone a chance to respond to the new evidence. Otherwise, I'll close the public portion of the hearing and announce what I'm going to do. Anyone with an interest in this application may offer relevant oral or written testimony, but your testimony should be relevant to the applicable approval criteria, which are set out in the staff report. It is important that you make your best case to me. Although my decision is subject to appeal to the City Council, Council generally will not allow new testimony and evidence on appeal. They'll decide any appeal based on the record before me. So if you feel that it's important that myself or any future decision maker know something about this application, you need to make sure it gets into the record before me. In order to preserve your right to appeal, you or someone expressly representing you must testify orally or in writing before the close of the record. And in order to raise an issue on appeal, someone must have raised that issue before me. If you feel you need more time to prepare, you can ask me to hold the record open or to continue the hearing. If I hold the record open, you'll have an opportunity to submit additional written testimony and evidence before I make a decision. If I continue the hearing, we can come back and do this again at a later date. But whether or not the hearing is continued or the record is held open for any other purpose, state law requires that I hold the record open for an additional week for the applicant to submit a final written argument without any new evidence. The applicant can waive that right if they choose. But if anyone else wants me to hold the record open or continue the hearing for any other purpose, you must make that request before the close of the hearing tonight. Today. When you testify, please come on up to the podium here, or the table. We need to make sure you're on a microphone. As you can tell, our hearings are recorded and broadcast out through the room here. So we need, in order to be audible by everyone, we need to make sure you're on a microphone. Please begin your testimony by stating your name and your full mailing address. Please spell your last name so I get it right. And if you represent someone else, please say so. Finally, if you have any exhibits you want me to consider, such as a copy of your testimony, photographs, other documents, or physical evidence, you can put it on the bench over there and staff will grab it and mark it as an exhibit, and I will consider it as part of my deliberations. But unless there's any questions, that concludes my introduction. Mr. Galizia.
Thank you. I am Andy Galizia. That's G as in George, U-L-I-Z-I-A. I'm a planner here with the Bureau of Development Services. It's 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97201. This is a Type 3 conditional use master plan with a concurrent adjustment review. Just as a note, this application was actually deemed complete in October of last year. The applicant placed the review on hold at that time and granted the maximum extension to the city's 120-day deadline for a final decision. So as extended, the city's deadline for a final decision is October 24th of this year. This is the site in the red hash marks. There are four different tax lots under common ownership. The site is zoned R10, which is a single-dwelling residential zone. There are no overlay zones or plan districts on the site. Surrounding properties also have single-dwelling residential zoning, R10, R5, and R20. And areas to the north of the subject site, parts of those areas are also in the C or conservation overlay zone. So I'm going to review some photographs of the site and the surrounding neighborhood. So on the right, you'll see a map of the area with an arrow which indicates where I was standing when I took the photograph and where I was pointing towards. So this is a photograph of the existing church on the site, viewed from the south. This is a photograph of the existing school. It's a K-8 school, and this is viewed from the north along Southwest Humphrey. This is a view of two existing parking lots which the church and school own across the street from the main campus. There's one here and one here, and this is Southwest Patton Road. This is Southwest Greenleaf right there.
Mr. Cleese, just so I can orient myself.
Sure.
Can you point on that map on the right with the red where those two parking lots are located?
Sure. Here's one.
Uh-huh.
And then here's the other.
Yeah, but where is it on the red map?
Oh, I'm sorry. Here and here.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Got it.
Now
Sorry about that.
I was rotated 90 degrees in my head. Now I'm with you.
Cool. This is a photograph of the entrance to Southwest Greenleaf from Southwest Patton. The church is here on the right, and one of the parking lots across the street is there on the left. This is a photograph of the school. This is actually the gym, viewed from the south. This is a photograph of the intersection of Southwest Humphrey and Southwest Patton. The church and school over here on the right, just out of view. Across the street from the church is this gas station, which is actually in a residential zone, but it's a non-conforming use. And this is a view of the neighborhood across the street from the church, just for context, just to show the neighborhood is characterized by hills, lots of trees, and single dwelling houses. This is an aerial photograph of the subject site. The four tax lots in the subject site are outlined in blue here. You can see the existing buildings on the site. This is the church, and this is the school here. These are the two parking lots I was referring to in the photographs that are across the street from the main campus, there and there. So schools and churches are both conditional uses in the R10 zone, so certain improvements require land use review. A conditional use master plan, like the one proposed here, is essentially a kind of conditional use review that can encompass multiple projects within the same review. A conditional use master plan can be valid for 10 years, while a standard conditional use review is only valid for 3. The applicant proposes a number of improvements to the site within the next 10 years, including building expansions. The applicant states the master plan improvements are not intended to increase the size of the church congregation or the school enrollment, but rather to better serve the existing congregation and enrollment level. Many of the proposed improvements don't actually require any land use review, so I'm going to focus here on the building expansions that are subject to land use review approval. So the first one is the existing gym, which is shown here on the aerial photo, and this is a photograph of it, would be demolished, and a new addition would be constructed in approximately the same location. The new addition would be larger, though. It's depicted here in this drawing. It would include a 29-space parking garage on the lower level, and above that, a gym and some classrooms. The existing parish hall for the church is right here in the aerial photograph. This would be demolished and replaced with a new parish hall that's larger and extends further to the east here. The new parish hall is depicted here in this drawing. The parking area here in front of the existing parish hall would be reconfigured into a plaza space. Only three of the striped parking spaces in this area would be retained. However, with the new parking garage, the total number of parking spaces on the site would actually increase from 75 currently to 87 in the applicant's proposal. In addition, there would be a 120 square foot, one-story addition to the south side of the church right here. You cannot see this in this drawing, but it would be approximately here in this rendering. So I'm going to go over the conditional use master plan approval criteria in 33820050. The first is that the master plan contains the components required by 33820070. And these are the required components in 33820070. The applicant provided the information required by this section, including the boundaries of the use, a statement of the proposal with the uses and functions, detailed site plans, a professional transportation and parking study, the anticipated phasing of improvements. However, the applicant does request that the improvements be allowed to occur in any order within the 10-year period, and the staff recommendation would allow that. And the applicant included two adjustment requests with the master plan proposal. As discussed in the staff report, some of the items on this list were not relevant to this particular proposal. In a conditional use master plan, the applicant can actually propose future development and uses without including any detailed plans and just propose development standards and/or review procedures that would apply to future work in the master plan. In this case, though, the applicant did provide plans, including building elevations, for each of the exterior improvements in the master plan. So staff found that criterion A was met. Criterion B is that the proposed uses and possible future uses in the master plan comply with the applicable conditional use approval criteria. I'm going to discuss the conditional use approval criteria on the next slide. Staff did find that these would be met. In criterion C, the proposed uses and possible future uses will be able to comply with the applicable requirements of this title, meaning the zoning code, except where adjustments are being approved as part of the master plan. So the applicant did propose two adjustments with the master plan. Staff did find those approval criteria are met, and staff also verified that all the other requirements in the zoning code could be met. So criterion C is met. So the conditional use approval criteria for schools and churches and residential zones are in 33815105. Criterion A is about the proportion of household living uses, and specifically that the overall residential appearance and function of the residential area will not be significantly lessened due to the increased proportion of non-residential uses. So this site is already developed with a church and school, and the proposal is not to expand the congregation size or the school enrollment. The main assembly area for church services would not be increased in size, and there would still just be one homeroom classroom for each grade level, and no new grade levels beyond the existing K-8 are proposed. For these reasons, staff found the proposal would not increase the proportion of non-residential uses in the neighborhood, and that criterion A was met. Criterion B is about physical compatibility, specifically that the proposal will mitigate differences in appearance and scale with adjacent residential development. So by far the largest development in the master plan is a three-story parking garage and gym addition, and it's depicted here. This would be on the south side of the school. So the building area would be significantly larger than neighboring homes. However, a number of features would help to mitigate differences in appearance and scale. For one, there are existing trees on this hill, shown here, which would screen much of the view of the addition from the street. Staff recommends a condition of approval that the existing trees between the new addition and the south lot line be retained. Also, a number of design details with the building would help to bring down the perception of bulk and scale and increase the compatibility with the residential neighborhood. These include the horizontal bands of contrasting colors and materials to help break down the vertical scale of the building. There would be a notch in the corner of the building that's most visible to the street that would help to soften the view of the corner. The east wall of the parking garage, which is, you can just kind of see here, is recessed below the upper floors, which is also helps to diminish the perceived scale of the addition. And there would be horizontal lap siding and rows of vertical windows that would have a more residential appearance than many institutional buildings. And the facade would be painted to match the existing church. Staff recommends condition of approval to require these specific design elements in the final building permit plans. And staff also recommended in the staff report a condition of approval for some landscaping in front of the east garage wall. should be not out of view, but about here, to further soften the view of the garage from the street. The other projects in the master plan were the new parish hall addition, which is depicted here, and the 120 square foot addition to the south side of the church, which is out of view, but would be about there. Both of these additions would be much smaller than the parking garage and gym addition, and both of these would be single story areas that would fit well within the existing development on the site and with the residential lots nearby. So staff found that criterion B for physical compatibility could be met with conditions of approval for the parking garage and gym addition. Criterion C is for livability, specifically that there be no significant adverse impacts related to noise, glare, late night operations, odor, litter, privacy, and safety. Staff found nothing about the master plan proposal that would create significant impacts for any of these factors. The church and the school are already existing, and again, the proposal is not to expand the congregation or the school enrollment. There are no sports fields with spectator facilities and field lighting proposed for the school. There are no late night activities proposed. There are no new windows that would be close to neighboring properties or neighboring homes. With regards to safety, many of the neighbors' comments that are referenced in the staff report were about safety issues related to the school pickup and drop-off, specifically congestion on Southwest Greenleaf Drive. PBOT staff reviewed these comments as part of the review. PBOT did not find sufficient nexus to require the applicant to make some of the street improvements that some neighbors were requesting. However, that's primarily because the church and school would not be increasing the intensity of the use. However, PBOT did recommend a condition of approval for a specific drop-off and pickup procedure that had been reviewed by PBOT to be implemented. So for these reasons, staff found the proposal would not create significant adverse livability impacts and that criterion C is met. Criterion D is for adequacy of public services, specifically for the transportation system, water supply, police and fire protection, sanitary sewer capacity, and stormwater disposal. PBOT analyzed the application in relation to the transportation system. They found the transportation system was adequate for the proposal. With conditions of approval, they recommended that would require the applicant to implement their transportation demand management plan and their pickup and drop-off procedure for the school. PBOT found that adequate parking was available for the site. With regards to bike parking, the requirement for a school can be set within a conditional use master plan, and the applicant requested to have the bike parking requirement for this school set at 7 bike parking spaces, and PBOT supported that request. The Water Bureau, the Police Bureau, and the Fire Bureau all found that public services were adequate for water supply and police and fire protection. The Bureau of Environmental Services accepted the applicant's proposal for sanitary sewer disposal, and they found the applicant's proposal for stormwater disposal was generally acceptable, but they recommended a condition of approval for BES to approve a 30% concept plan for the public works permit before approval of the first building permit in the master plan. So with the conditions of approval recommended by PBOT and BES, staff found that adequate public services are available and that criterion D was met. Criterion E is for area plans, and this site is within the Southwest Community Plan area. The objectives from the Southwest Community Plan that staff found to be relevant deal with compatibility of new development with Southwest Portland character, including the natural environment, supporting educational institutions, and supporting the development of pedestrian facilities. So as I mentioned in the findings for physical compatibility, the building design includes features which promote compatibility with the neighborhood. The site is heavily treed and would remain so. The applicant states the proposal would help the school to provide better educational opportunities for the students. And at the time of building permit review, PBOT would require the applicant to construct new sidewalks along most of the site's street frontages, improving the pedestrian system in the neighborhood. So for these reasons, staff found the proposal was consistent with the Southwest Community Plan and that criterion E is met. So the applicant requests two adjustments with this request. The first is to reduce the minimum required building setback from the Southwest Greenleaf Drive lot line to the new parking garage and gym addition from 25 feet to 15 feet. And the second is to extend the time limit for the required non-conforming upgrades from 2 years to 10 years. Non-conforming upgrades is a zoning code standard that applies when improvements above a certain valuation are proposed on a site with existing development that would be retained. This applies to things like parking lot landscaping and screening for existing mechanical equipment and garbage areas. Without this adjustment, the zoning code would require all of these upgrades to be addressed within 2 years of the first building permit. With the adjustment, the applicant could phase the non-conforming upgrades over 10 years, phased with the different projects of the master plan. So the adjustment approval criteria are in 33805040. There were four approval criteria that were applicable to this site. Criterion A is that granting the adjustment will equally or better meet the purpose of the regulation to be modified. For the setback adjustment, the purpose of the standard is to maintain compatibility with and limit negative impacts on surrounding residential areas. So in this case, while the closest corner of the parking garage and gym addition would be 15 feet from the street lot line, it would actually be about 38 feet from the edge of the paved road. The public right-of-way for Southwest Greenleaf Drive there is 60 feet wide, but the road in the middle is only about 20 feet wide. So the addition would not appear as close to the road as the setback number would suggest. And also, as I discussed in the findings for the conditional use criteria, the design includes a number of elements to mitigate the perception of bulk and scale and increase compatibility with the residential area. This would include the horizontal bands of contrasting colors and materials, the notch in the corner of the building that's most visible from the street, horizontal lap siding, and rows of vertical windows. For the nonconforming upgrades adjustment, the purpose of the standard is to upgrade nonconforming elements that affect the appearance and impacts of the site. There's nothing in the purpose statement that addresses the timing of the required upgrades, and this adjustment would not actually get the applicant out of any required upgrades. It would only extend the timing to match the 10-year life of the master plan. So staff found the purposes of both of the standards were equally met for both adjustment requests and that criterion A was met. Criterion B, the proposal will not significantly detract from the livability or appearance of the area. Again, for the setback adjustment, the addition would not appear as close to the road as a setback number would suggest, and the design includes a number of elements to mitigate the perception of bulk and scale and increase the compatibility with the residential area. The nonconforming upgrades adjustment would ultimately have no impact on the livability or appearance of the site or the area. All of the required upgrades would still have to be addressed. The adjustment would only extend the time limit for addressing those upgrades to 10 years from 2 years. So staff found that criterion B was met. Criterion C, the cumulative effect of the adjustments, results in a project which is still consistent with the overall purpose of the zone. This one is applicable when there's more than one adjustment requested. For this one, though, staff found that there was really no cumulative impact of the two adjustments because the second adjustment to the time limit for nonconforming upgrades would ultimately have no impact on the site when the master plan improvements were done. All of the upgrades would still have to be addressed within 10 years. Only the time limit would be adjusted. So staff found that criterion C was met. Criterion D is not listed here because that relates to city-designated scenic and historic resources. There are none of those on this site. Criterion E is that any impacts resulting from the adjustment are mitigated to the extent practical. For the setback adjustment, staff found that the design elements to bring down the perception of bulk and scale would effectively mitigate from having the building closer to the street lot line. For the adjustment to the nonconforming upgrades time limit, staff found there would ultimately be no impacts that require mitigation since, again, all the upgrades would still have to be addressed just over a longer time to match the master plan. So staff found that criterion E was met. Staff found that all of the applicable approval criteria could be met with recommended conditions of approval. The first condition is just that the building permit plans conform with the land use approval. Condition B would be that the conditional use master plan expires 10 years from the date of final approval. Condition C is that the existing trees directly south of the parking garage and gym addition would be retained. Condition D is that the specific design features I mentioned for the parking garage and gym addition would have to be shown in the building permit plans for that project. Condition E was recommended by Bureau of Environmental Services, and that's that the building plans that show the vehicle area being resurfaced east of the new addition for the gym must demonstrate compliance with the pollution reduction requirements of the stormwater management manual. This would be required anyway, but the BES staff wanted to put that as a condition of approval for reference. Condition F was also recommended by BES, and this is just that the Bureau of Environmental Services must improve the 30% concept plan for the public works permit before the first building permit. Condition G would be the minimum bike parking requirement being set to 7 long-term bike parking spaces. Condition H would be that the transportation demand management plan that was submitted by the applicant must be continually implemented. This one was recommended by PBOT. Condition I, was it the school drop-off and pickup procedure that was evaluated by PBOT, must be continually implemented until the construction begins, and then once the construction begins, the drive aisles in the parking garage must be made available for queuing during the morning drop-off and pickup to expand the queuing capacity of the site. That was part of what the applicant proposed in a letter that you'll see in the record that they submitted recently. So for the public comments that you'll see in the record that are referenced in the staff report, many of those, again, were about congestion caused by school pickup and drop-off. PBOT reviewed those comments and addressed that in their review. Overall, they found that because the proposal would not increase the intensity of the existing use, that congestion was not so relevant to their review. However, they did recommend this condition as a way to at least address the school drop-off and pickup, that it's at least conforming to what they reviewed for this review. The applicant will actually propose a small change to the language of this, which I reviewed just this morning and also reviewed with PBOT, and it's just about making the pickup and drop-off procedure changeable year to year as long as it substantially conforms with what they submitted in this review. PBOT staff and BDS staff have no issue with that proposed change. And that concludes the staff presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Let me just a second finish this thought, and then I have a couple questions.
Sure.
On page 15, I think it's PBOT's comments, they refer to STM. I assume that's St. Thomas More, the applicant. They're just using the abbreviation.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Some of the neighbors expressed concern about construction going on for 10 years. I understand it's a funding. They're not going to be building for 10 years. They'll do projects and projects as they get building permits. The adjustment for the 10 year to allow 10 years for the
non-conforming upgrades.
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. For the non-conforming upgrades, just allows the applicant to the construction can go on. This approval's for 10 years, regardless of that adjustment. The adjustment just allows those improvements to track with the proposed project.
That's correct. That would allow them to phase the improvements with adjacent projects on the site. If not for that adjustment, they would have to complete the non-conforming upgrades within 2 years. That's what the zoning code requires, including things like parking lot landscaping. And then when they do future projects, they might want to use some of that area as staging, mm-hmm. and that would make it difficult to retain the landscaping they just planted. So that's the purpose of that adjustment.
But the code allows 10 years for the master plan, regardless of that adjustment.
The code for the master plan review allows 10 years, yes.
There's an existing conditional use permit for this use, is that correct?
Yes.
And does that limit the enrollment capacity to 225, which is?
No.
Okay.
It did not.
Should there be a condition to that effect? Because their charter limits them to 225. Right now, I'm assuming they're slightly over capacity because they want to expand to accommodate, which is reasonable. But in the future enrollment could theoretically increase. They could end up in the same situation where they're tight. Should it be limited to 225 without additional review?
Well, the staff recommendation doesn't actually include a condition of approval that limits the enrollment mm-hmm. to 225. It's staff report notes that the applicant's proposal is not to increase enrollment, but rather is still to have one homeroom mm-hmm. of 25 students per grade level for K through 8. So nothing about the decision as staff proposed it would make them come back in for review if they had 226 students someday, mm-hmm. just to make that clear. Yeah.
Is such a condition warranted is my question.
We wrestled with that question. The applicant really prefers not to have that imposed because they may have situations, their charter limits them to 25 students per grade. They're K through 8. They advertise that. It's for small class sizes. They wanted to retain, and I'll let them speak to this too, they wanted to retain the flexibility if they ever had multiple children from the same family wanting to go in the same year, that they could go over that a little bit. So it's up to the hearings officer, of course. Staff did not, in the end, recommend a condition of approval to that effect.
Okay. Maybe a cap at 230 or 235, something like that would be an option, but I'll let the applicant address that. On page 16 of your staff report, that I think it's staff planning staff notes that queuing is not allowed on Greenleaf Drive for pickup and drop-off. I understand their pickup and drop-off plan is intended to eliminate that. Condition I requires that they implement that pickup and drop-off plan. Should it also prohibit queuing on Greenleaf, just so that's expressed in the conditions?
I think it could. I mean, I would want to clarify the condition that refers to Exhibit A23. Mm-hmm. Talks about parents are not supposed to queue in Greenleaf Drive in the afternoon pickup. If we had a condition of approval that said there'd be no queuing on Greenleaf Drive at all, that'd be a little bit difficult to enforce, especially in peak periods. Not all of the queuing in that intersection is necessarily related to the school. I might refer this to PBOT staff, too, if they have any comments about that.
Okay.
And they're here this morning. But, yeah, it's a difficult issue. I think that the school definitely, people have certainly said, and I have no reason to disbelieve it, the school contributes heavily to congestion at certain times of the day. Probably not all of the queuing that could occur in that intersection or near that intersection is related to the school.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The applicant here represented.
Chris Hagerman, H-A-G-E-R-M-A-N, with the Bookin Group, B-O-O-K-I-N Group. We're at 1140 Southwest 11th Avenue, Suite 500, Portland, Oregon, 97205. We're land use planners and representing St. Thomas More Church and School in this conditional use master plan application. Father King, who's the priest of St. Thomas More, had been prepared to be here and present the church as the face of the church. He unfortunately had a family emergency that called him away at the last minute. So Mary Murphy, who is a parent volunteer, is going to read a letter that was drafted by Father King.
Mary Murphy, M-U-R-P-H-Y, 1841 Southwest Montgomery Drive. That's in Portland, 97201. City Hearings Officer, City of Portland Representatives, and our Southwest Hills neighbors. Thank you for reviewing the conditional use master plan submitted on behalf of St. Thomas More Catholic Parish and School. I apologize for not being with you today, but I've been called away by a family emergency. However, we have an experienced and knowledgeable group of representatives in attendance today, and I'm confident that they can address any questions you have. Thank you for your understanding. St. Thomas More was founded more than 70 years ago. The focal point of our parish is the beautiful church built by renowned architect Pietro Bellucci. Our sanctuary hosts regular mass throughout the week and weekends, as well as baptisms, weddings, funerals, and other events that mark important stages in the lives of our community members. Our campus also is the site for a cramped and aging parish school featuring classes from kindergarten through eighth grade. Our parish hall hosts events for the community, and we're planning to host the neighborhood disaster emergency cache and meeting spot. Our large parking lot even serves as the neighborhood safe parking spot for when the occasional snowstorm makes the steep, windy roads of our neighborhood impassable. However, we recognize that in order for these good things to continue, we must make the effort to modernize our facilities. Our buildings were built in the 1940s and 50s. The wear and tear on the facility is evident, and the cost of ongoing maintenance is increasing every year. We're looking forward to approval of our master plan, which is the culmination of 3 years' hard work by our team and committed volunteers drawn from our parish, school, and neighborhood. We intend for construction to be accomplished as quickly as possible so school can resume normal operations, and we look forward to the construction permitting process to ensure our building activities minimize the impacts to our neighborhood. We have reviewed the staff report in detail and appreciate the considerable work the city reviewer has put into it. We have two small requests for accommodation to the plan that will be supplemented by a memorandum from our team. Number one, accommodation for revisions to the school pickup and drop-off plan. And number two, provision for flexibility in the requirements for the screening planter for the garage entrance. In closing, I would like to express my sincere thanks to the people gathered here today that have helped us get this far. SWIRL, our neighborhood league I don't know exactly what SWRL stands for, I forget.
Southwest Hills Residential League.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy.
Southwest Hills Residential League, just so somebody's on the mic when that comes out.
And our neighbors for hosting us for several meetings over the past 2+ years and providing thoughtful feedback that has improved our plan and fostered our relationship with the neighborhood. We want to also thank the PBOT staff for spending a considerable amount of time to provide input and identify the public improvements recommended in our plan, and the BDS staff for being extremely helpful and responsive throughout the conditional use review process. Thank you again for the review today. I and my team look forward to answering any questions you have. Blessings, Father Martin King.
Thank you, Ms. Murphy.
This is Chris Hagerman again. So St. Thomas More has been in this location for over 70 years. It originated in a neighborhood that was sparsely developed at that time with residential uses. Residential uses have grown, obviously, in the neighborhood, as has traffic from further west. It's just important to put that kind of history into the context of planning this site and requesting approvals for this site. The facilities for the school date back from the 1950s. It's not that the school is exceeding the capacity of the current facilities. It's just that those 60-plus-year-old facilities are no longer sufficient for contemporary education. There's multiple uses for things like the gymnasium. It serves as a cafeteria. It hasn't been updated in decades. So the programming of the interior spaces that'll come about as a remodel is basically to provide people a little bit more breathing room compared to the current spaces, which are multiple use. Nobody envisioned a computer lab in 1950s. Dedicated spaces for art, language, special education, things like that are now part of a contemporary educational experience, and the school is simply right-sizing their facility for that. To that degree, the 225 that's mentioned in the school charter is the approach the school continues to take in the future. They do sometimes have limited exceptions to add an additional student when a family has multiple kids coming into the school. That's often just a temporary situation. The number of families stays relatively stable, and that's the ultimate driver of any transportation of impacts. If a family of three moves out and a family of five moves in, the student numbers might go up by two, but the number of families stays the same. Since everybody carpools, you know, it's the same number of vehicles coming in and leaving. So this is not a proposal to expand the amount of trip-generating activity on the site for either the church or the school. We are happy with the staff report. We have two conditions we'd like to suggest some edits to. The first is specific bullet, the last bullet under condition D, which prescribes a planting area in front of the garage to soften that facade. The applicant would like to request some changes to that condition that would provide more design flexibility as the building gets closer to full design. That would allow for a variety of potential metal screens or a variety of vegetative materials, which would achieve the same standard of softening that facade from the garage face. And I'll submit that with this memo here in a second. The second condition regards the pickup and drop-off procedure, which is in the student manual. It is reviewed and revised on a yearly basis with the goal of maintaining safety and maximizing traffic flow on Greenleaf. So we just would like a little bit of language thrown into that condition, which recognizes the church will continue to evolve that that procedure, but it'll stay substantially in conformance with what's in the exhibit. Beyond that, we're available for questions. We have the transportation engineer who prepared the traffic report here if you have additional questions of him. We can also speak to more of the programming of the interior spaces that'll go forward as the church projects are completed. So we're available for any questions that the public or that you might have. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any questions at this point. Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify in support of this application? Yes, ma'am. Morning.
Morning. I'm Nancy Seaton from the SWRL, or Southwest Hills Residential League Neighborhood Association.
And Ms. Seaton, how do you spell your last name?
Oh, sorry, S-E-T-O-N.
Oh, thank you.
2020 Southwest Edgewood Road, Portland, 97201. And I'm here to speak. I'm president, co-president and land use chair for SWRL, and I'm speaking on my behalf and on behalf of the SWRL board. We support the application and want to note that St. Thomas More has been consistently responsive in their dialogue with the SWRL and the neighborhood, beginning back in 2016 with the pre-application conference. And since then, the church has shared detailed updates on their plans at SWRL general and board meetings, and also convened several special neighborhood meetings with their technical experts to respond to questions and concerns from the neighbors. They also shared their professional transportation impact study with the neighborhood. We have no objections to the two requested adjustments, reducing the building setback from Southwest Greenleaf Drive and extending the time limit for the required non-conforming upgrades to 10 years. This is a complex four-phase 10-year master plan dependent on ongoing fundraising and understandably requires a 10-year window. SWRL appreciates the infrastructure improvements, sidewalks and curbs in particular, which will contribute to pedestrian safety. We concur with recommendations that St. Thomas More encourage students to walk, bike, take transit, car, and vanpool to school instead of single car only drop-off and pickup. The STM has worked with the city to explore numerous options for improving traffic flow around and through their site, and the school is complying with the city's requirements. Key concerns from neighbors include pedestrian, cyclist, and vehicle safety at intersections and traffic congestion at nearby intersections. In particular, traffic backups at the intersection of the cul-de-sac Southwest Greenleaf Drive and busy Southwest Patton Road during morning drop-off and afternoon pickup at times can block residents trying to exit from Greenleaf for at least 15 minutes or more as they try to get to work. However, since the St. Thomas More proposal does not increase school enrollment or congregation size and won't add new uses, activities, or events, it would not impact the amount of traffic congestion around the site. If anything, the plan could slightly improve peak hour traffic flow by increasing the looping space for pickup and drop-off. Moreover, PBOT reviewed St. Thomas More's drop-off pickup procedure on Greenleaf and is recommending a procedure as a condition of approval. Therefore, we agree St. Thomas More would not be responsible for expensive infrastructure fixes, such as stoplights at nearby intersections. This is a larger issue for PBOT and the neighborhood. We plan to work on that. St. Thomas More is as much a victim of the increasing commuter traffic at these problematic intersections as is the rest of the neighborhood.
Thank you, Ms. Eden.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Sarah Bachman, B as in baby, A-C-H-M-A-N. My mailing address is 4436 Southwest Warren's Way. Thank you very much to the St. Thomas More parish members and employees and people that they have worked with to make this plan concrete. I have no objection to the plan itself. To update aging facilities, and no personal objection to a restriction on, or making the restriction on the number of students in the school flexible, because a family of several students might come or go mm-hmm. on any given year. My problem is traffic. Okay. My house was built by my grandparents, and so it's been there since 1924. And so we've seen a lot of change in that neighborhood. There's no question about that. Plus, we are all very aware of the traffic increase throughout Portland. But my neighbors and I have a real problem with the backup on Greenleaf Drive. It's unsafe. The new sidewalk will help, but along with this, today's surprise to me, ask for a request for a accommodation for a drop up for changes in the drop up and pickup plans. I'm not sure what that means. We're concerned that with more teachers going into park underneath the gym. I mean, I can see what the purpose of the plan is, but that means more car trips up Greenleaf Drive. We don't know when that's going to happen. Is that going to add to congestion? Several of my neighbors have suggested a change in the start time for classes, looking at other schools having made that change, to reduce the number of cars coming in at peak commute times. St. Thomas More gave us a detailed and written list of the plans or the possibilities for improving the crosswalk on Patton Road that had been considered and rejected. I would still, as a person who uses that crosswalk and who drives by the crosswalk all the time, I would favor or wish for either a flagger on that crosswalk, because it's dangerous in peak hours of the day, and or flashing lights to bring drivers' attention to the fact that somebody is crossing. And I know that St. Thomas More has, the principal has tried in the past to get the Portland Roads authorities to approve mm-hmm. the expense, and I know that is an expense, of placing some kind of flashing signal there. I would just like to add my advocacy for that as a safety measure. Short of that, a flagger could be hired to help improve the safety of that crossing. Bottom line, the neighbors understand, and I'm speaking for myself. Mm-hmm. I've talked with my neighbors, but I'm not speaking for them. The neighbors understand that St. Thomas More has a parking issue that has arisen with the development of the a parking and driving issue mm-hmm. that has arisen with the development of the neighborhood. But we tend to talk about that increasing the number of drop-offs and pickups in the Dosh Road parking lot. How could we make that happen? And at this point, we don't see in the plans anything more than kind of a squishy, let's hope it's going to work. You know, let's hope our plans are going to work. And the reason I'm talking about a flagger and this flashing lights is because I'm thinking as maybe parents would be more likely to use the option of the Dosh Road drop-off and pickup if that crosswalk were made safer. So thank you for the opportunity to talk with you. And I do want to say that St. Thomas More has been very helpful in accommodating the neighborhood's request for meetings and being a center for emergency preparedness.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify about this application in support or in opposition or questions? Okay. Seeing none, anything further from staff?
No.
Okay. Mr. Hagerman. do you have any response to the concerns that were raised?
Yeah. It's something that hasn't been mentioned so far is that St. Thomas More is also going to be improving infrastructure in the right-of-way on six frontages, which was what took quite a bit of time to figure out what was appropriate for the site and the amount of changes that the church is recommending. A significant portion of those improvements will be sidewalks among the main pedestrian areas connecting those parking lots that are just across the street from the campus to the campus itself. So it's fairly demonstrated in the designs that are in the application that the intention is to try and encourage more and more parents to make use of those lots, have their children cross at the crosswalks across Dosh, and then enter the campus from there. The flexibility that we're potentially requesting in the pickup and drop-off procedures is to adapt to those changing conditions as things are improved. The traffic congestion that occurs for a very brief period of time in the morning peak period is it's hard to discern whether that is strictly because of school drop-off or if that's just a spillover of larger traffic backups through Dosh, through Humphrey, through other areas. It is a slowing effect, which in fact aids in the safety of pedestrians crossing those streets in many cases. And since neither the church nor the school are increasing in their capacity, there isn't a demonstrated nexus for us to make expensive improvements as a part of this review. Going forward, as we've mentioned, St. Thomas More is more than willing to be a partner with the neighborhood and the city in looking at larger regional transportation issues and ways to resolve this. And I think that also applies to the issue of a flashing crosswalk beacon. That's an issue that would need to be decided probably outside of the conditional use master plan review process, and it's something that's obviously a part of an ongoing dialogue. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to ask if anybody, any of the other representatives from St. Thomas More want to specifically address any of those comments as well, if that's okay.
Hey, Mr. Hagerman, did you already submit the revised proposed condition language?
I did.
Hi, good morning. My name is Matthew Barkley, Barkley, 4054 Southwest 55th Drive, Portland 97221. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for the time. I just wanted to address two comments that came up. I'm a parent as well as a volunteer for the campaign to rehabilitate the buildings at St. Thomas More. As somebody who drives in and drops off my kids, I'm acutely aware of the traffic issues that stem both on Greenleaf, but also perhaps more substantially on the feeder roads of Dosh and Patton. And so I've spent a lot of time in my car observing the flows and trying to think of ways to improve that. One of the things that I've noted about the school is that the school is acutely aware of those traffic issues and has maintained a traffic plan in its school manual, which is published to all the parents and which the school spends some time educating the parents about. But one of the things that they also do is they adapt that plan from time to time to deal with changing conditions, enrollment changes, the flows of parents come and go. Last year there was a substantial, in my mind, a substantial because it affected my particular way of entering and exiting the campus, changed the plan that took cars out of the roadway and shifted them around the campus. And I think it would be wise, instead of a requirement in the plan that would say you must maintain the plan that you have today, to something that would say you must maintain the plan in substantial conformance to what you have today, that allows us to make subtle changes to the plan to deal with those changing conditions. And in what I foresee here in this particular context is, for example, changing the assignments of which parents pick up in what locations, that sort of thing. Right now we divide certain parents A through M go through this particular route.
So it's based on last names?
It can be.
Okay.
I don't want to necessarily say it's always and
yeah.
only going
no,
to be
I'm just wondering
on,
how you how that split occurred.
That was the plan this year.
Okay.
It also had a lot to do with, for example, what grade your kids were in, because that also tells you where the kids are disposed in the building, and you don't necessarily want to have kids crossing.
Right.
Anyways, you get the concept. Our accommodation was just merely to say, give us a little bit of latitude to tweak the plan based on conditions.
Okay.
So that we can be good neighbors. That's really our best, our key intent. Let me see if there's anything else that was raised here. What I would note about the expansion and capacity, I believe Chris addressed this well. The building's old, and the uses are constrained. We have a kindergarten that's located underneath the gym, which is a tough place to have little kids because the gym is, of course, used for basketball and other activities, including a lot of jumping. And it would be nice to move the kindergarten out from a room that is located under the gym and something more copacetic to a learning environment. That's the sort of purpose about what this plan is intended to do, as well as address the new educational needs of having special rooms dedicated for special learning purposes.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Thank you for your time this morning.
Does the applicant want the opportunity to submit a final written argument? I would have to hold the record open for a week.
No, we don't.
Okay. With that, I'll close the public portion of the hearing. I understand the neighbors' concerns about traffic, but as the applicant and staff noted, they're not increasing their capacity. So there's no, constitutionally, the city cannot require that the applicant provide additional street improvements or specifically the flashing light. I think that might be a great idea, depending on the engineering issues. There's a number of things that the city has to consider, but we can't make this applicant pay for it with this application because they're not making the problem worse. They've already been approved on this site. They're not making it worse with this application, so it can't be required as a condition of this approval. But otherwise, based on the findings in the staff report, the application generally does or will, with the conditions, meet the applicable approval criteria. So I'm going to approve the application subject generally to the conditions in the staff report. I want to look at the revised the tweaks to the condition that the applicant has proposed. And see where I want to go with that. But I will do that in my written decision. I will issue that within about 2 weeks, which puts us, is the 11th? Right around August 1st, I think I will get my decision out. So if you've testified orally or in writing, you'll be sure and receive a copy of my decision when it's issued. But that concludes our hearing for today. Thank you all for coming.